The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And Dee Snider is back with a brand new solo album for the love of metal and stories about Twisted Sister's farewell shows. You'll find out why Twisted Sister called it quits again, how Dee Snider teamed up with Jamie Josta to write and record his new record, and what it's like for him playing small clubs with his new solo band after headlining festivals with Twisted Sister. Dee's also telling stories about the late Twisted Sister drummer AJ Perro, how and why TS got banned from playing some venues during their heyday, and why the band originally called it quits in the first place. He's also talking about what got them back together in the 2000s. So Dee Snider returning to Talk is Jericho with more great rock and roll stories. But before we get to Dee, Fozzy's only got a few more festival dates in Europe. We're playing Leyendas del Rock Festival in Alicante, Spain tomorrow, Thursday, August 9th. August 11th, the Alcatraz Festival in Belgium. And August 12th, we wrap up the tour at Bloodstock in England near Derbyshire. And then we come back to the States for the start of the Judas Rising tour Friday, August 24th in Atlanta at Smith's Old Bar. That show is almost sold out. If you want to pick up tickets, go now to FozzyRock.com. We've also got Adelita's Way, Stone Broken, and The Stir coming out with us on the rest of the dates. Continuing on the 25th in Birmingham, then the 26th, Huntsville, 29th, Clarksville, Tennessee. Take the last train to Clarksville. Little Rock, Arkansas on August 31st. So many other dates. We're going all the way to September 28th in Tampa, September 29th in Fort Lauderdale. Go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket info, including how to get packages, how to get tickets for Fozzy's legendary VIP meet and greets. One of the best in the business. We play a mini concert for you. Then we take pics. We sign stuff. We hang out. We chat with you. Come hang with us before the show with special VIP rep Jack Slade. Jack, should people come to Fozzy's VIP program?
Anytime you can. Anytime you can.
And if you do, you get to meet Jack Slade.
Which is pretty cool for me.
Absolutely. So go to FozzyRock.com. All the details on how to make that happen. And stay right here. Talk is Jericho for all the details on Dee Snider's new record. It's For the Love of Dee Snider, starting now on Talk is Jericho. So literally just walking off stage after a killer performance, Dee Snider. It's fun watching you that close do your thing. Because honestly, like, you know, you are one of the underrated and great front men in rock and roll. And it's just cool to have people see that and to be reminded of that. And those that know to be refreshed once again.
Let me kill Meister, kill Mister, pay me the greatest compliment. Because
was it Meister or Mister?
It's Mister.
No, Mister.
Okay. I always say, but I say Meister. I used to say AJ Perro for 30 years, and one day he says, "Oh, by the way, it's Perro." I'm like, "Dude, I've been saying it wrong for our entire career." Luckily, I got it right before he passed.
Yeah.
But one of the greatest compliments he ever paid, let me pay me. And now, mind you, this is the guy who saw the Beatles. He's in the Cavern Club.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
He saw the Stones at the Marquee Club.
Right.
Okay, I mean, he roadied for Hendrix. So when he pays you a compliment, it's like, well, and he said, D, well, he didn't say it clearly like this. I had to have it translated, actually. Yeah. He said, "You're one of the top three frontmen I've ever seen, and you're the best at talking to a crowd." Mm. And that was, see how excited
not
I got.
Not good at holding a water bottle.
Something on the floor. And that was like one of the greatest compliments I ever got from, you know, from someone like that. It's amazing. Mm.
It's interesting because I remember we were laughing because it's called Rock Fest and I Want to Rock You, change it to Fest, which is great. But, you know, and nowadays that's how people talk to the crowd. But I still remember 1984 Iron Maiden Twisted Sister opening, and you were, you know, swearing on stage. And nobody swore on stage at the time, but you always said, this is how I talk to my friends. This is how I'm going to talk to the people in the crowd. But now it's like, you were the first guy to do this. And now every single guy on stage says that.
I didn't realize I was the first guy who was like talking. You know, I'm like on stage, I'm a lot like Richard Pryor when he does this. I mean, I am just cursing a blue streak. And today I started with a C word and it was downhill from there.
Talk about Mother Nature.
Yes. You know, but I remember getting arrested for profanity, and, you know, I remember, you know, Alice Cooper and Bill Graham, the great promoter Bill Graham, coming backstage after we did a show for him in San Francisco and going, holy shit, you got a fat, like I've never heard anybody like curse. And we're just from New York, you know, like playing biker bars and stuff. So to us, it was just like, you know, conversational.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you get out to the Midwest, though, and you start talking like that, people are getting upset.
But like I said, now it's, I don't know if you even realize you kind of were a pioneer in that. Just how everybody talks now on stage.
You're welcome. I'm not sure.
Gotta ask you too, the Beetle boots on stage that you were wearing, how can you wear those on stage, man? I would have break my ankles.
I have these made in England. They are Beetle boots. You got it, man. I'm like, you know, I'm 63, and the Beatles were the first band I saw, and they were wearing these Beatle boots, Cuban heels, and I've loved them ever since. And back in the 80s, I had those damn, I'm not wearing them today, I'm wearing cowboy boots right now, but I had those damn things made in England in a little shop, and I brought it up. I want a pair of Beatle boots, and I'm still wearing them. I'm just the most comfortable shoe to wear on
even
stage.
Even on stage?
Yeah.
Even with the little heels on?
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
You can jump up and down?
They're
and
actually like 3 inches, even though they don't look it, it's a Cuban heel. Yeah. It's deceptive.
No, but it was a great show today, and I want to talk about the new record and just where all this came from, For the Love of Metal, because you did and we'll get into this, you put a great selection of the classic Twisted Sister tunes, but then all these great new tunes that you have on For the Love of Metal. How did this all come about? Because I noticed when I was actually doing 3 seconds of research, which I rarely do, none of the songs on the record are written by Dee Snider.
No, not one. And that was pretty deliberately. I mean, you got to go to the whole process. First of all, just as far as live doing, I'm doing, what is it, 5 original tunes, new songs.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, half and half. Really tough to go out there and play that much new stuff. Because I call new songs bathroom songs. I mean, dude, I remember seeing, this is God's honest truth. Every band that's got any kind of a legacy and any kind of hits, they're like, they dread the new songs. I know Iron Maiden's gonna say, we don't dread them. You do too. And because the audience glazes over, especially if the album's not out. And I remember seeing Led Zeppelin for the Physical Graffiti tour. They started the tour before the album came out. They went into Kashmir in Madison Square Garden. Half the place left to go to the bathroom. I call it, it's like Pavlov's dog. Yeah. This one's off the new record. Suddenly everybody feels like they got to go to the bathroom. So I'm like, you got to go to the bathroom? I got to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm playing like 5 or 6 new songs. So you don't got enough piss in you.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a challenge.
But let's talk about that for a second. Because you mentioned, I think Maiden might be able to get away with it because their fans are so rabid. But other than that, like, they will play, like you, 5 new songs, 6 new songs.
They try. I'm sorry to cut you off.
That's
but
right.
Remember a few years ago, they decided they were going to do the tour and they were only playing a new album.
The whole album in its entirety, A Matter of Life and Death.
And people were pissed.
Yeah.
Pissed. Mm-hmm. Even they caved. Mm-hmm. And now they always play. The next tour was like, it was Power Slaves tour, revisited,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Legacy
now,
tour. Yeah.
I mean, you know. It's just, it's reality. People want stuff they know.
But you're Dee Snider, and here you are with, and we'll talk about, you know, the Twisted Sister finishing retired, and now you're continuing on knowing what you're going up against. Because it would be very easy to just do Twisted Sister, be higher up on the bill, play the songs people like, but you're almost starting from scratch with these iconic songs in between.
Well, so this goes, okay, so this goes back, how did this all come about? And it came about because I was done. Okay, I haven't written, just so you know, since Widowmaker, I haven't written a new song. Mm-hmm. I felt at the end of Widowmaker, I'm not
that
a
review. Was in the 90s, right?
Yeah, 90s. Yeah. I'm not a review guy, but I, you know, I saw a couple that, you know, and you know, Chris, and people, like, when something they said resonates with the way you're feeling inside, when someone calls you on your shit, you know, you kind of like that. Those are the ones that connect with you. Someone goes, "Your knee sucks," you know, whatever. But somebody said, it was a second Widowmaker record. He said, "Sounds like D's trying to sound like a contemporary band." And I, is there sugar in that, please? You gotta put some sugar in, please. I think I have coffee. Is this just about, yes, coffee is good. And they were right. Like with Twisted, I wrote all the songs and I was always just writing. And I was at the forefront of what was happening, what became glam metal, hair metal, became an 80s sound. I wasn't trying to follow like so many other bands that came later in the 80s were trying to imitate the other bands. We were just Twisted Sister and we were creating the sound. Now it's the 90s and I am studying records and I'm trying to imitate records. And they call me on it. And then another review said, you know what? People don't want their brother's heroes, they want their own. And that kind of hit me as well, saying, you know what? Maybe it's time for me to pack it in. And that's when I started doing radio and voiceover and acting and movies and all kinds of stuff. I just went in a whole other direction and I stopped writing. So anything I've done, you know, cover records and Christmas records and novelty records. So in my mind, last record I just did, I was challenged to do a mainstream rock record. I did it. I did it well. It went nowhere. I said, all right, tried that, nothing. And I was done. Jamie Josta on his podcast, great guy, great friend to both of us. He said, I got a challenge. I challenge you to do a contemporary metal album. I said, who's producing? He said, me. I said, who's writing the songs? He said, everybody will want to write for Dee Snider. And so I said, all right. I said, because I can't write them. I love new metal, but when I write, it comes out like 80s, and I don't want to sound like I'm trying to imitate the other bands. But you guys, so people from Lamb of God, Killswitch Engage, Disturbed, people from all these bands started coming out of the woodwork to write for me. And Josta, to his credit, he climbed in my skin like Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs. What are you, like a 14? I mean, he was like, he put on the Dee Snider skin, and we talked a lot about what I wanted to say and where I was mentally. And so songs like the first thing, Tomorrow's No Concern, is about my basic philosophy of Dee Snider philosophy. I'd rather talk to you about what I'm working on now than 30 years ago. Even though now it sold nothing, I'm more excited to show you this new thing I'm passionate about than just go back. Not that I love the past. So, and Tomorrow's No Concern was born. And you go down the list, I want to talk about bullying, you know, and I'm really starting to become to the forefront of me. So Become the Storm and Dead Hearts were born. So he started creating stuff that reflected how I was feeling. And to show you just how deep in the Dee Snider skin he was. And this is a credit to Jamie. And I'm not looking for an awe moment here. You're going to go awe, though. Mm-hmm. When we started recording the record, my mom, 85-year-old, fit, healthy, vibrant art teacher, artist, active member of the community, charity work, just an amazing example. I just say to her, Mom, I see you. And just how just vibrant you are at 85. And I have great hope for me. Because I tell people, I don't want to be in the 27 club. I want to be in the 87 club.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Wow, Dee Snider is one of the few who lasted to 87. You know, that's my goal. So my mom gets hit by a car on Halloween.
Wow.
Brain hemorrhage. Turned into becomes a vegetable.
Oh, dude,
for 2 months, she's in the hospital and then dies on January 2nd. So Jamie says, you want to stop this process? And I said, hell no. I said, you know, metal has always been that thing for me to escape, to express anger, frustration, sorrow, heartbreak, all those dark, difficult emotions. Without it, I'd be dead. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the thing about metal we all know is the secret. A study came out recently about that metalheads are better adjusted adults than non-metalheads. Did you see that?
I didn't.
It's a fact.
What's the reasoning behind it?
I just did an interview. I did an extensive article for Psychology Today. They want to know what's going on. And I said, it's simple. We are letting it out. All those depression, anxiety, all those feelings. We get in the pit, we scream, we yell, we rage, we lose our minds, and then we laugh and we feel better for it, don't we? Mm-hmm. Don't you?
Absolutely. It is the
thing we turn to, and it has been there for us. So they get that. So I said, I can't stop. So in the studio, my mother's passed. We're recording the 13th song for the record. Jamie, the last song Jamie brought in, I'm Ready. And I'm singing it, and I read it, but it didn't really register. And I'm in the studio, and suddenly I stop, and Jamie wasn't there. Nikki Belmore, my drummer, engineer, co-producer, is in the studio, and he goes, I said, and the line I'm singing, death leaves a sorrow no one can heal, love leaves a memory no one can steal, is the line. And I turned to him, I said, did Jamie write this about my mom? And he goes, yeah. He saw what you were going through, and he wrote this song about facing mortality and about loss, and every word that he wrote on this entire album felt genuine to me. So when you hear me sing, it sounds like it's me, because Jamie Josta was channeling me, getting me, and I it's not, like I said, not a thing on the record that I can't just get behind and roar. And thank you, Jamie Josta, for that.
It's so unbelievable that he was able to channel that. And was it hard for you to sing songs written, lyrics written by other people? Because like you said, you wrote every Twisted Sister song.
I wrote every Twisted song.
Every Widowmaker song.
Yeah. I always wrote my own lyrics. I thought it was going to be, you know? And we went in, and it was a Field of Dreams record. And that's why the title's For the Love of Metal. We had no deal. We had no budget. We were just out of our own pockets. We went in between things we were doing and recorded. And when we did the first two songs, American Made and Running Mazes, I was like, whoa, these things connect with me in such a way. Running Mazes is built off of both of, I love Game of Thrones. And there's a great line when Arya's learning fencing from her instructor, and he says, what do we say to death? We say, not today, not today. And Jamie brings in this song because we both love Game of Thrones, Team Khaleesi, by the way. And I'm going, dude, this is like, I love that scene. So as each song came, we became more confident. And they're on the other side of the glass. And Jamie said, look, dude, I've challenged you. I thought it was going to be great. It was even better than I expected. You came alive. And I said, because I don't want to be yesterday's news. I don't want to feel like, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm respected and I get all those legend, icon, I get those words used and whatever. But it's exciting to me to have something new and exciting. And I'm singing more contemporary music. It's still got its edge. It's still in the old school there. And it made me feel like my voice mattered. And that was the thing. Jamie said, dude, your voice matters. You, Halford, Dio, these voices that are great. And I said, you're going to put my name in that same circle? He goes, I would, even though you don't get that. He says, I know you don't get that kind of respect. And we've discussed it, and a lot of feelings that, you know, my makeup and costumes and all that craziness overshadowed my singing and my performing ability. Like that became like it sort of made people not sort of ignore it or whatever. But anyway, he said, there's a place for your voice. So as the songs are coming in and as I'm singing and as the excitement's building, and then Jamie said, I got the title, For the Love of Metal, you know, because it was the most genuine record and the most genuine thing I've done. We had nothing. Hence July 27th. What kind of release is that? We weren't ready. We didn't know there was going to be a tour. These dates were just some odd dates I had left. So we haven't even started the game plan.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
There's so many things you just mentioned that we can go off in different directions, but first of all, I think Dee Snider's voice, when you hear your voice, you know who it is. And there's only a few, like you said, Ronnie James Dio or Bruce Dickinson or Axl Rose, or those type of voices.
And I'm not, you know what?
You're not.
I respect those people.
Sure.
And I wouldn't put my name in that circle.
You're not, but I am.
Well, thank you.
But I am. And what
Jamie's
I'm saying
done
is,
it and I appreciate it.
When you're singing these two, I also appreciate what you're talking about reinventing and constantly reinventing, because there's a lot of bands, wrestlers, entertainers, performers that will stay resting on the laurels. And God bless you, man. You can say the same catchphrase or play the same,
same
set list.
That's your right.
There's a band out there right now. I'm not going to say who they are. They play the same nine songs with guitar solo, bass solo, drum solo, and they're headlining, and they do it every time they tour, and it's like, you can't do that because it only lasts so long. For you to go out there with this whole new record, as soon as you open up your voice and sing the song, it's you. So this now gives you a whole new life and a whole new career in a lot of ways.
You know, and I hope so. And that's why, you know, Jamie and everybody, you know, like I said, all these great performers, great Howard Jones is on the record. Lisa yeah. White Glues from yeah. Arch Enemy is on the record. So many people, they were so passionate and so excited. I don't want to cheapen their enthusiasm by not committing. And that's why, I mean, in the 90-minute set, I'm doing like seven new songs.
I read your whole set list.
Yeah, I'm doing more songs. So, and believe me, while I'll never get away with not playing a couple of Twisted things, I would love to see the day that I'm just going out there and I'm doing a Dee Snider set. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a way, Ozzy. You know, Ozzy is, that's the goal. Ozzy plays, does he do a couple of Sabbath songs? Is Paranoid, I think, or whatever. Yeah. But he's got enough catalog that he can do his own thing, and people aren't, and nobody feels disappointed. That's a tough, it's tough to get there, though.
You know, McCartney said something. He says, whenever I play a new song, I always give the fans a spoonful of sugar afterwards. Like, if you stick
that's what I'm doing on the set list.
And let me say what you got here. You got new song, classic song. New song, classic song. It's one for one. And that keeps people engaged, and they'll respond better because you're giving them the spoonful of sugar.
Well, you know, and like I said, I'm not alone. I saw Elton John talking. This was before he announced his retirement. And he was talking about going out on the road. And he says, I'm a little nervous. And the guy says, Elton John's nervous? He goes, well, I got a new album. He says, and I'm playing some new material. And he says, you can see the faces glaze over. He says, and I always tell people, I see you leaving for the bathroom. Do you think we're blind? I see people getting up, you sons of bitches.
Right.
You know, we put our heart and soul into a new song. We play one new song, and people are like, oh, a new song. You know, so and everybody, while we're passionate about the new material, it sucks to try and get it over. But I try to remember, you know, when Twisted first went out, when we first came to Wisconsin, we were playing material nobody knew. We had no hits. Mm-hmm. Under the Blade, Can't Stop Rock and Roll. We had, you know, nothing. Zero. We had a couple of hits in England. Mm-hmm. Nothing. So we were just playing all new material. But then we would do a little sugar in there. We would throw in It's Only Rock and Roll, But I Like It cover. We'd do a couple of covers in the set. Mm-hmm. And those were like the little oases for the audience. You know?
That's right.
It's a big trick, people.
So you're talking about you're filling up kind of the dates that you had left over from before. When you go out and do a full tour, like how is it for you? And obviously you're a smart guy, always reinvent. But now you're from starting from scratch. You're not headlining the festivals like you mentioned today. What do you mean? I mean, I'm not the headliner?
Yeah.
How is that as far as being on the road at a different level now?
Well, that's a really good question. I'm not going to insult the young bands that are out there who are literally getting in the van. I'm not going to insult you because you're out there really doing it. Those days are behind me, so I'm a flyaway guy. Mm. So it's not the Twisted used to do night after night after night, like so many bands. And it was just like, it just didn't stop. And that's the way you did it. I'm doing so many other things. Like I'm just, I don't know if you heard about Rocktopia on Broadway.
No, I haven't.
Okay.
And the last time we spoke was at your Christmas show in Chicago.
Right. Well, Rocktopia is this show that was on Broadway. It's a concert event and mixed classical with rock.
Rock singers,
but really, so you had the opera singers, Broadway singers, and they were rotating. Had me one time. They had Patrick Moynihan, whatever it is. What is his name? From Train?
Monahan.
See, I get credit because I didn't really know his name. Robin Zander from Cheap Trick. We each took a week and we came in. Well, they asked me to join the cast because they're going out on the road now. So I'm just joining Rocktopia. So I'm doing my new record. I'm going to work on that. I'm doing Rocktopia where I'm literally singing Stairway to Heaven, Dream On, Kashmir. Shit, I've never sang. I've never
hard
sang
songs.
A ballad. You know, and I go,
the price
is like up tempo. Yeah. And it's also, I mean, this stuff where you get, I mean, people are actually the biggest compliment and insult I get after every show is, I didn't know you could sing. I'm like, what? Wait, what? What?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that was Twisted Sister. Like, yeah, you know, yeah. Those are your songs, but when I didn't know you could sing Zeppelin, you know. So anyway, I'm joining them as well. I'm going to be doing shows. So this, you know, I'm going to be supporting it. I'm so excited about the reaction, the response so far, and it excites me. You know, I know I'm like the worst interview in the world. I'm the best and the worst. Because the best, because I'm easy to talk to. Worst, because I ask myself my own questions.
See, but that's the thing. It's like when I get interviewed, yeah. I always kind of take control as if I'm the host. Like, wait, I'm not the host today.
I know.
You know? But what I really appreciate, what you talk about constantly reinventing and constantly building and moving and doing all these different things. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about your Christmas show, because I think, is it still going? You did 2 years and that was the end?
I did 2 years. Right now, we did Chicago and Toronto. And right now I'm in discussions to turn it into a stop motion Christmas special, you know, like claymation, like Rudolph and stuff. And it's about this, like, these middle-aged guys who like never gave up on the 80s thing. So they're like still wearing the spandex, still got the hair and the makeup, but they're like bursting out of their spandex. They're just way past their prime. Uh-huh. And they make a pact with the devil to find fame and fortune, but find the magic of Christmas instead.
Yeah.
It's got an exorcism in it. It's got a satanic ritual and a conjuring. And I believe it's a family film.
Well, I watched
family
it.
Show.
I saw it. In
oh,
Chicago.
You came?
Yeah, I came downstairs and watched it with you.
Oh,
and there's the plot twist of the spelling of the name and Santa and Satan and everything.
That's right. You came to see it.
I thought it was really well done. And I know that, like, first of all, the fact you were able to do 2 years is amazing. Because most times 1 year, one and done.
So. Well, the second year, you know, just the economics of it just got to be too much. So now we're trying to find a home for it again. I just want to compliment Jericho here. Mm. This guy is the real deal. He's a real deal. You know, he's wrestling superstar. It's undeniable. You know, yet something one of my agents said to me when I wanted to get in the radio, he said, D, you're not going to walk off a Coliseum stage into a six-figure radio gig. You're going to have to get dirty. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to just start at the ground zero. And to your credit, you have just, you know, I mean, the glory of being a wrestling superstar and saying, all right, man, I'm ready to get in the van. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to play the bars. I'm ready to prove myself, and you have. And the fact that a guy and a supporter comes down by himself, no fanfare. This cast was stunned. You have so many fans. And they're like, isn't that Jericho? It's like, you know, Jericho's walking around. He just shows up by himself, watches the show, supports me. And thank you, brother. I really appreciate it. I respect the hell out of you.
I appreciate the kindred spirit, like I said, of always trying new things. You mentioned all the movies that you did and radio and, you know, stop-motion Christmas specials and all these other things. When you could still stay with Twisted Sister and go out and headline, you know,
it's kind of the easy way,
right?
And maybe the easy way is the best way, but it comes back to that, you know, song one thing that Jamie Josta, like, what is D. Snyder about? Is it D. Snyder is about, what am I doing now? Mm-hmm. What am I excited about? What am I passionate about? And, you know, and I see it in your eyes. I saw it when we met in the parking lot today. And you're talking to me. I mean, I remember the Fozzie record, the first one. It was like a tongue-in-cheek.
You're in the movie.
I'm in the movie. Yeah. I'm sadly doing that whole thing with the World Trade Center.
That's right.
It's so tragic. I mean, it was
a
funny
bit.
We
were talking about the World Trade Center, which...
Well, I was talking about... It was a mock on Vanilla Ice's saying that Ice Ice Baby and Under Pressure were not the same riff.
There goes dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Ours goes dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yes.
And I asked you, so can you do something like this for Stay Hungry?
Yeah, so we Stay Hungry, and in the background was the World Trade Center. So I'm going, well, see, their Stay Hungry, so their song's totally different. My song's da 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 da, and their song's da 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 da. I said, it's like these two towers. They're completely different.
The A tower and the B tower. And literally a year later is when the attack happened.
It's awful. I mean, it's just so weird. Life is weird like that. But, you know, you started this down this path. You know, you love metal, having fun with it. And then all of a sudden, I just watched it mutate in the last 17, how many years now?
17 years since we started. And the last, I'd say, 6 years is when it just started really, that's when we really started saying, let's do this for real and make it happen.
And it's just crazy. And you did. And props to you, man. Respect. I mean, that's, and Justin and I, we talk on his podcast. We like to, we talk about things like that. Related to the audience, mm-hmm. and say, this isn't, we're talking about, a wrestling superstar and a rock star with a superstar band, but it can relate to you as well. It relate to you. It just relates just the idea of taking a chance, mm-hmm. And not being too afraid and staying safe all the time. You know what I mean? Because I'll tell you the truth is, as much as staying safe, the people who stay safe, they're not really that happy about it. They want it. Everybody wants to try something new, but most people are afraid. And you got to say, you know, like, what's the worst thing can happen? It doesn't work. I mean, you're no worse off than you started.
When you have the confidence in your ability to know that I can make this work, you know?
Well, you're not going to stop until you do.
Right.
I mean, God, dude, from that first record, 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's Twisted Sister stupidity level. If you saw if We Are Twisted
Sister. That was amazing, by the way. I want to talk about that. What a great documentary.
You know, and we were together, and what it shows is 10 years before we broke. And it was practically moronic. We just would not take no for an answer, you know, and but you got to respect it.
But what I couldn't believe about that was when they were talking about how you guys, before you even got signed, you played a show like in Long Island at like a fair or something with like 10,000 people.
23,000 showed up.
Tell the story.
Okay. The reason I know it so well is because my grandkids went to that fair and they were going around the rides. They went to this carnival, whatever it was. And there was a big poster of Twisted Sister said, did you know that in 1979, Twisted Sister played show here and 23,000 people, the highways were shut down, the roadways, they were doing a weekly club band show at this amusement park. And they were getting 500 to 800 people, 3 to 8, you know, depending. And Twisted Sister played and 23,000 people showed up. And Kiss was playing to a half a house at the Garden that night. Mm. So thank God Kiss was playing because we really would have had problems. Thank God they took off some of the... And we were banned for years from outdoor venues in the Northeast because they had security for a few hundred kids and 23,000 showed up. And we had no record. This is without an album. We're a local phenomenon. You know?
How can you have been so huge? And this is one thing that I saw in the movie. How could you have been so big and nobody's signing you?
It was like the Hudson River was a moat from New York City. Like there was no bridge. You know, like, oh, we can't get over the sea because we can't swim across. Like, I'm like, there's a bridge. There's a tunnel. We used to offer a limo ride and dinner to any record executive who would come out to see us. One did. Her name was Reen Nally. She was the head of Atco Records. That was AC/DC's label originally. Yes. She came
Loudness.
To Long Island, saw the band. Her mind's blown. She walks in this club. There's like 2,000 kids losing their shit. She goes back to New York, goes, I saw the greatest things in sliced bread. Twisted Sister. Everybody said, that barman? And then she suddenly felt like stupid because everybody was like, they hadn't seen us. Mm. And then she never answered. It was the end of it. So the point is, we just couldn't get, they would, in a hot second, they would go down to CBGB's to see a band playing for 50 people and they wouldn't come out to Long Island. Yeah, it was like an hour and a half to see a band playing for 1,000 or 2,000.
Or 23,000.
Yeah, people. They would not come.
Yeah.
It was so frustrating to us as a band.
What finally broke you guys then?
We went to England and we went around the horn 5 times in the States, rejected 5 times. By every label. Finally went to England and, you know, Hendrix did it. Joan Jett did it. Stray Cats did it. I mean, there's a long history. England's one of those little countries the size of a state in all reality, but they've got a lot of influence. So you could break in this one little area and suddenly the world, you break in, you know, you're rocking London and people go, whoa, did you hear about this band? You know, suddenly it's coming back. So we went to Europe and we got a deal in the UK. An indie deal with Secret Records. They folded. And then we got signed to Atlantic Records, in the UK for the world, much to the chagrin of the president of the label in the States. He was literally pissed off that somebody went around his back because he had rejected us 5 times.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And we were being signed. We come back. We have a hit record in England. No tour support. We're in Ugly Duckly wrecking rent-a-cars, $7 a day PDs, 3 guys in a room. And we just start selling records. And finally, they give up fighting Atlantic Records because they couldn't fight the tide. We were just going town to town and winning. Mm. But it was just this, again, this, it's the human, it's the American spirit. No, it's stupidity. I mean, it was just like refusing. How do you not take no for an answer?
Sure.
But you know what the thing was? we were seeing the audiences, like Rejected in the daytime and go play for 3,000 kids in a club on Long Island, losing their shit. Mm-hmm. And we just look at each other and go, well, who knows? These record-buying public here or these suits, half, most of them are lawyers that just, you know, change their jobs.
Right.
Who knows better? And that just kept us going.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to say, too, because it was such an interesting thing about how it took you guys so long to crack. You make it huge. And then I think you said 18 months later, it's done.
Yeah.
How did that happen so fast?
You know, I mean, I wrote about this extensively.
You did, and the book is great. Shut up and give me the mic.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I wrote that myself, like you wrote yourself, and we're both inspired by the same man,
Mick Foley,
who gave us the courage.
That's right.
And Mick said, you know, D, you know, he knew you, he knew me, and he said, D, you know, I know you can write. You've been writing screenplays, whatever. He says you should just go for it. Mm-hmm. And probably the same thing happened with you. The publisher didn't want it. Because, I mean, and I get it. You know, just because you can throw a football doesn't mean you can write. And just because you can write a story doesn't mean you can throw a football. Mm-hmm. They're different talents. And so Mick said, just to ask if you write a few chapters. So I wrote a few chapters. They read it and they said, go for it. And they probably did the same thing with
they
you.
They did
so,
exactly
the Mick, same. A lot of love for me and yeah. Chris for you. You know,
absolutely.
What a great guy. What an inspiration yes. that guy is. But in the book, I talked about it. And when you try going for it so hard and if it's so long and people tell no, 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 no. Suddenly when you break through and the world starts telling you yes and they're kissing your ass, you start buying into your own hype real fast. And I nearly got a divorce from my wife because she was the only one still telling me no. I don't want to hear no from anybody.
Right.
I heard no my whole fucking life. And not don't tell me no. I've had the vision of this band. I wrote the songs. I created the videos. I know. And I just became, literally, I looked up the definition, megalomaniac is what I became. And then you got to be listening. You don't know it all. You can think you know it all. You just got to keep your ears open. And I either shut down and I wound up, the same thing I piloted success, I ran into the ground because I would not listen to anybody had to say. Hmm. And you know what? Thank God. Because if I had kept going, I would have been divorced. And I would have been one of those miserable people sitting in a golden tower with nobody around because I had alienated my band. I had alienated my family. My wife. I was losing my son. I was losing everything. I had everything, but I was pushing everybody away. And then who are you surrounded with? A bunch of, you know, and you've, same thing, yes people. And women that you wonder why they're there. Mm-hmm. Is it my money? Is it my success? You're never sure about them anymore, you know? So Suzette, I've been with 42 years. I'm pretty sure it's me. Because she didn't want me in the first place. So I won her heart.
Which is unbelievable in rock and roll, as long as you've been in the game, to be married 42 years. But that's an amazing statement, something that all of us that have been in the biz for a while can relate to. But what was it like reading your book and talking about how, like, you guys did the Come Out and Play record, then you do the big headlining tour, and then as you get out on this tour with the big stage show,
yeah.
Nobody's showing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It, you know, it's devastating. Mm. You know what I mean? It's, you know, especially when you're so, your ego is now so big. We got big, your front person, it's by nature you got a big ego. But now with success and with everybody kissing your ass, you're just becoming so full of yourself and you're so cocksure at every level. But the fact that I was missing the clues, I was missing. There were moments, and in the book, I kept going clink, 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 like the little like I said, it was like a combination lock, and you could hear the combination of failure just sort of falling into place, one tumbler at a time, just dropping, and not stopping and going whoa, 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 whoa. That's a bad sign. I should, you know, we did the video for Come Out and Play. It was for Leader of the Pack or Be Cruel, whatever it was.
Leader of the Pack.
And nobody shows up. We wanted extras, and we had to hire extras.
Really? Were you put like an open ad out or something?
Yeah, yeah. We had to hire extras. For I Want to Rock, it was like literally the police came for that video. For We're Not Going to Take It, we had an arena filled with people. The kids would, and now we go down, and I remember the director and the producers have bullhorns. They got barricades. They're ready, and there's nobody there.
Wow.
For the free And they come back and I go, how'd it go? Because I didn't even go down because I was too famous. It would have been pandemonium. And they were like, nobody was there. Clink. You know, like these things, that's where you're supposed to like throw the brakes on and go, whoa, what happened? But the ego is just like screaming, oh, no, no, I got this. I know. I got under control. And one day you realize you don't.
And then now working your way back up, and I want to talk more about this record, but I also want to talk about, I had Lizzie Borden on this show a couple months ago, always been a big Lizzie fan, and he was talking about the PMRC and how it ruined his band. He said like Twisted Sister and Alice Cooper got some publicity out of it, but for him, like the Vice Squad is showing up and he just got shut down. A lot of bands did. You made the fight against the PMRC, and it was so funny to hear those letters because it seems so archaic. But at the time, it was a big deal, the Parental Music Resource Center.
Yeah, yeah, and the rating of the records, and it was, you know, the censorship issue. I mean, it's taught in colleges now, any course on censorship, and, you know, they study that event in history. And it was, I didn't even realize the significance of the moment until, like, I got to Washington that morning, and I'm driving down the road, and there's just... It was a maelstrom of media maelstrom from all over the world, just satellite vehicles everywhere and protest groups from both sides. I'm going, oh, damn. And walking in that room and it's packed and the cameras and going, I mean, I knew it was like important, but I didn't realize it was to become this thing, you know, which is just crazy. But it was had a very negative effect on me. And I'm not saying it was, as I said in the book, I'm not saying it was solely to blame for the demise of Twisted Sister, but post that event, you know, we were already had weakening, and we became the poster boys for what was wrong with rock and roll, yet the fans knew we were like the least bad of the bunch, and they were just about finished with us anyway, a lot of them. So when Mom said, well, you can go see Motley Crue, but you can't see that Twisted Sister, and that was happening, the kids were like, okay, Mom, you know, like, you're not shooting that marijuana, are you? No, Mom. You know, like that's a stupid parents. But I remember, you know, after a show, arena show, meet and greet, and this kid is just losing his shit, and he's got a Dokken shirt on, Dokken opened. And he was like, my favorite band. I said, well, why do you got a Dokken shirt? He goes, oh, my parents can't know I was here. My parents can't know I came to see Twisted Sister. But... So we were weakening, but on a personal level, mail was checked, packages were inspected, phones were tapped.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Suddenly I became, you know, you don't go and embarrass senators, Rockefellers, and Kennedys, and, you know, and these people. You don't make fools out of them and you know, and Al Gore's, and without some retribution. So, and I was like, what the, you know, and it just... It just became something that I didn't care about. I'm not a politician. I went in there because I was asked to carry the flag for an important moment in time. But I don't want to be a politician. People say, dude, you should run for office. No way. I've seen the job. I've seen these people. They're scumbags. These people are terrible. They shouldn't even allow. There should be a test. If you say I want to be a politician, they should say, no, you can't. Because any reason, if you want to be a politician, you're there for the wrong reasons.
Right.
You get people who just say, all right, well, you know, I'm a business person. I need to do the job. But it's, you know, the point is did not have a positive effect.
Who asked you to do it?
For the life of me, I don't know. You know, it's funny because I did a movie called Warning Parental Advisory, what VH1 did, where they reenacted. And they asked me to be in it, which was the equivalent of an actual Tyrannosaurus on the set of Jurassic Park. I mean, I walked in onto the set, and I'm literally wearing the clothes I wore to there. I'm wearing the jean jacket, the exact outfit, the boots,
sunglasses.
It still fits. And I walk in, and everybody's like, oh, look at him. He was there during the Metallozoic era, you know, so, but it was a weird, and then everybody's kind of thing going, is that how Zappa did it? Is that how, everybody's like coming to me for like approval. So it was very weird to do that movie, but.
Because it was basically you, Frank Zappa, and like John Denver.
John Denver, right. God bless him.
Yeah.
And because he stood tall, but at the same time, they imagined how it came together, but I just, you know, my manager said, they want to know if you want to testify. And I was like, hell yeah. So I never asked who. It just went and did it.
Because you went in there, like you said, I think you even had fangs at the time.
Oh yeah, sharpened
teeth. Like a rocker, scumbag rocker guy.
I put mascara on because that's what we did. Yeah. And they said, are you going to dress up? I said, this is my business suit. I mean, this is what I wear. I'm not gonna, I'm not dressed up for these people. Zappa came in Armani, he looked really good, but I said, that, you know? So I went in, I stood tall, but I look, I watched that footage and I go, holy dude, you had balls and you can see them. Your pants are so tight.
You got the Bon Scott package.
You can literally see that shaft, the head, everything.
Have you ever been to see the Bon Scott statue in Perth?
No.
He's got the package. Oh, they actually put the Bon Scott package on it. It's like, ah, yes, that's great, that's great. It reminds me because years later when you guys first did the Twisted Sister reunion, you guys came out with the makeup on.
Yeah.
And listen, but that's kind of the same thing. You're now it's like 20 years older. You still look great, but everyone puts the makeup on. It's not quite the same vibe as what it was.
Yeah. Well, one thing about the makeup, though, it kind of covers up a lot, a lot of sins.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so so I used to say, we put the makeup back on and look, we look like aging drag queens. I said, but that's the bad news. The good news is we always look like aging drag queens. So it really looks pretty much the same. We're never, the pretty boys are dying a death out there. I tell you, us ugly guys, we're going, hey, you know, Lemmy looks pretty good. He looks pretty good for his age. Alice, he looks really good for his age. Everybody's like, ooh, I'm not going to mention those other names, but God, not aging so well. Just taking it on the chin.
What was it strange for you to do that last show with Twisted Sister? Knowing it was the last one, assuming that it was the last
one. It was the last one, because I really made a stink about this whole retiring and then coming back thing, you know. And you know, people have misinterpreted what I said. To reiterate, you don't have to leave, stay forever. There are people who love you and never want to see you go. I said, but don't announce you're leaving. Don't sell us the high price ticket. Don't sell us the No More Tours shirt and then change your mind 3 years later, or even worse, Scorpions. Mm-hmm. 3 year farewell tour and there's so many more places to play. That's bullshit. I love the Scorpions. Stay, yeah. Stay forever. Don't do a 3 year farewell. Yeah. It's bullshit. Mm-hmm. Okay, but Twisted, you know, I mean, I love the guys and I was doing things in that band physically that I just knew I couldn't keep doing. And now we talked about when I first saw you today, I said, are you still wrestling? Because, mm-hmm. you know, Foley shows up every now and then and does his thing. But we, you know, when you're as physical and, you know, it's to compare my performing, and I'm not comparing what I did today. I am slowed down so much. Thank you, anybody out there who says, well, you're still kicking ass, D. Believe me, I know I'm not thrashing. I used to be throwing my body on the floor, deliberately crawling around. I was just shocking and whipping my body around. And I knew I couldn't keep going. Had a shoulder surgery, throat surgery, knee surgery. And I said, my neck was starting to go. I could barely turn. I can't do a turn my head fully anymore. I said, I got to stop some of this stuff. But as soon as I got on stage with Twisted, I just couldn't not with those guys and those songs. I just couldn't not do it. So I had to draw a line. So I was glad it ended because I mentally needed that. And people say, well, why didn't you just slow down with Twisted? I couldn't. My ego with Twisted. And we went out on a high note. People who saw those final shows, people raved about those final
headlining
shows.
Headlining festivals.
Yeah. And playing for tens of thousands of people. And it was a great moment. We got, you know, we're going to have some, you know, we filmed a lot of the shows. So a lot of stuff's coming out. We're like going to be the Tupac Shakur of metal bands. We have posthumously so much products coming out. JJ's not letting it, it's like we never died. But the fact is, you know, it was sad. It was wonderful. You know, it was 40 years on and off. We were ending on a high note, higher than, you know, the first time when we fell apart in 87. It was like people didn't even know we broke up. It was such a miserable non-ending for such a raucous band.
Right.
And here we were ending with some flair. The documentary came out, which I was so happy about because it showed people that, whoa, there was more to this band than I knew. Mm-hmm. I've had so many people come up and say to me, it changed, watching that video changed everything for me about your band. He says, yeah, you know, I saw the videos and you were around for a while and you had some hits, but I didn't know that, you know, you guys were the forerunners of that whole thing and you guys were around and fighting the fight for so long. And it's just, when you see that video, you can't help but be changed. Mm-hmm. And it's inspiring too. People said, hey, I'm not a fan, but it's almost a Rocky-esque story. Sure. In that, you know, these guys just wouldn't take no for an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody should, I don't think.
It's cool too. I'm sure this is kind of an interesting question I was thinking about. Like, was it hard to, like, you always were the main songwriter, the songwriter, the only songwriter. You're the basically the focal point. Did you ever feel a sense of responsibility? Like, I got to go out with these other, my guys. Like, if you're not going out, not a lot of revenue coming in for them. I'm saying yes or no, maybe.
No, but, I understand exactly what you're saying. I was talking to Cy, the band The Fix. Lead singer.
Oh, Cy Kernan.
Yeah. And we ran into each other at a corporate show. We were both doing a corporate show. And, you know, one of these people know what corporate shows are. You get paid a lot of money, and they bring in usually the front people of a band, and you do a few songs with a house band. So Cy was there, and I think Tone Loc was there. And
it was like a Walmart Christmas party.
Yeah, Lou Gramm was there. Yeah. It was crazy. It was there. So you get to sort of be with people you would never normally talk with. And Cy and I were talking about this pressure to be with the original band. Mm. And he said, it's like I'm paying 5 mortgages. He said, I feel like if I don't play with the guys, they can't pay their bills. Mm. And I totally got that. And it's, you know, and it's a lot of responsibility. But the same, at some point, you got to be responsible to yourself and your own well-being. So I tried to stay around as long as possible and a lot longer. We were together, reunited longer than we were together the first time. I'm going, all right, it's been 13 years. We're only together 11 the first time. I said, I think this is enough.
But also going out on top, like you said, a great big, you know, final tour. Everyone gets a couple bucks in their pocket and then you can move forward with the
Well, we were going to stop earlier. When AJ died, really took the wind out of our sails. It was always the 5 of us.
That's your bro for 35 years.
Yeah. And it was always the 5 of us on every album, except for the one last one with Twisted, which was supposed to be my solo album. Joe Franco played drums. Every date, every tour, it was always the 5 of us. And then AJ passed, the youngest of us, and you know, as JJ said, the nice one. it was true. AJ was the nicest guy.
He was a nice
guy.
And
we were all scumbags. And he was like the sweetheart. The only one, like when the band broke up, he was friends with everybody. Like everybody was friends with AJ. And really, he was. Even though we had 9/11 and things that pushed us together, AJ kept this communication going with everybody. So he deserves props for that. But when he passed, we were like, so what are we going to do? We're just going to slowly drop off.
Keep going until there's one original member.
And, you know, are we going to do this or are we going to just call it? And we all said, let's call it. And then the reality that AJ's personal effects and personal affairs were not in order. Mm-hmm. And AJ was the most prolific with the most children, the most ex-wives. He had 3 and 1, 2, 3, at least 4 or 5 kids. And he hadn't really done any estate planning. Mm-hmm. He hadn't taken, there was no will, there was nothing. So immediately, if you don't have a will, and people, let this be a lesson to you, it goes into, there's a word for it, but
perpetuity. They
seize everything, all the money, and it's frozen. There's no access to it. So his wives and children had no money because until they sorted it out, there's people out there screaming at the radio going, it's called, whatever it is. But, but that's what happens. So we literally went and did a club show locally where we just took the door and gave it to his kids. Because they had no money to pay the rent. Mm-hmm. So, and then it was sort of like, well, you know, we need to do something, you know, so let's do some farewell shows and let's, you know, and big shows, big paydays, and siphon some money into the estate and let's not leave them high and dry.
Right.
And everybody got a payday out of it as well. But that was really the motivation, was to take care of AJ's families.
How was it for you now putting together the band that played today? It's a great band. Was it like you're starting once again with a whole new clean slate? Where did you find the guys that you're playing with?
Jamie Josta has got a team for producing.
He's a lot like us, man. He's got a finger in a lot of pies.
Oh, yeah. Josta is.
Yeah,
Josta.
He does.
And when we got together, he had this little production crew. And it's him and the Belmore brothers, Charlie and Nikki. Nikki plays drums, engineers, and co-produces. Charlie plays all the guitars, all the basses, and they write. So they were contributing writers. And so we had a couple of guests, you know, on guitar and bass.
Right.
But most of the stuff is done by them. And That's his team. Somebody said to me, when I was doing an interview, said, what's your suggestion to other heritage artists looking to, you know, to make a contemporary record? I said, hire Josta, because he's got In Josta We Trust. And so these guys were involved on every song, Nicky, the Belmore Brothers. And I said, will you guys be my band? So they were just jumped at the chance. They play with Toxic Holocaust. They're Josta's backup band when he does his Josta shows.
Oh, so was that the bald guitar player?
Yeah, yeah,
the
yeah.
drummer, gotcha.
Yeah. So they're brothers. So we got them. And then they found a couple other people whose last names I don't know. Russell. Russell was the bass tech for Twisted Sister for about 10 years.
He plays like Mark the Animal,
oh, yeah.
too.
Yeah. He was Mendoza's bass tech. Yeah. And he's a great bass player. And I said, dude, you want to play? And he was like, yeah, hell yeah. Do you think I want to play a bass tech? So I never knew his last name, though. I still don't. Just Russell.
Just like Cher.
Yeah, yeah, Russell, just Russell. So anyway, so it was just sort of fell into place.
So when you're as we wind down here, you get together with the guys. Is there a certain paces that you put them through? Do you trust them? Do you James Brown them and like, hey, that's a bad note. This needs to be better. Or are you just pretty much D that shows up and sings?
It's a little bit of both. I definitely had seen the Belmore Brothers in action, and I saw the kind of meticulousness. And they're these death metal guys. They don't come from a blues place. They come from that, I don't know, Bay Area. I don't know what
flashy,
it is. This wristy, tightish shit. Yeah, yeah. Everything's like
right hand picking.
You know. So I mean, I saw their precision in the studio. So I had faith that, the two of them are mental cases. Mm-hmm. They're so strange. And I'm already in love with these guys, but they're like putties. You know Elaine's boyfriend on Seinfeld, Putty?
Hey, Putty, yeah.
Remember when she's flying on the plane with him and he just stares at the chair? He never says anything. He doesn't flinch. He doesn't. That's them.
I'm laughing
in between,
inside.
I think they may be robots because they just sit there in the dressing room. You know, usually there's all this joking and goofing around, band. Blah, blah. Just dead silent, just warming up.
Right.
And then they go out. So I had a lot of faith in what they do, and I knew they'd bring together a team. They rehearsed them. And when I came in, then, you know, it was close. Mm-hmm. But then I just come in and say, no, I need this, no, I need that, refine this, tighten that. But I got to give credit to the Belmore Brothers because they are just wonderful mental cases.
Just like you.
Yes.
And so the future for the D. Snider project, this record, would you like to continue to play more festivals? Are you going to go on some runs around the country?
You know, this is the thing. And you know, Chris can appreciate this. The normal course of action is when you're doing an album, you get the budget, you plan the studio, when you're going to record it, when it's going to be released, when the video's going to be shot. And it's a whole, like a year long or more game plan, when the tour is going to start, promotional, what you're going to do. We had no budget. We had no record deal. We knew nothing. This was a Field of Dreams records.
Right.
You know, Jamie was confident that it was going to work. But so when we didn't do any advanced planning. So when we finally get a record deal and everybody wanted it, actually all the metal labels were bidding on it. It was too late to do a tour, too late to plan anything. So like I said, these handful of shows I'm doing were just odd D. Snider shows that I was just doing that have changed to D. Snider's For the Love of Metal shows. So yes, we're planning some promotional shows in LA, New York, Chicago, just some underplays, you know, just to get the word out. Videos are coming out. And I've already talks because now the word is D's sort of returned to metal. I have a major tour being offered to me for 2020. I'm going 2020. 2020. I'm gonna be dead in 2020. 2020. Yes. But that's how far in advance people plan this shit. It's an arena tour, and they're like, well, we're already planning the shows, and if you're gonna be involved, we love to have you, but we need a commitment for 2020. So the point is, it's like I'm playing catch up here, but we're committed to the record. The response is really good. Napalm's already picked up the option on the second record. They're like, we want it for the love of metal too. You know, we're not doing it yet, but people are sold on the idea of D. Snider doing a more contemporary sounding record. You know, with his...
It's such a great idea. Well, it works. It fits.
Well, thanks.
You know, it fits. Last question. What's your favorite song on the new record, For the Love of Metal?
You know, It's so tough. I mean, and you know, I honestly have an amazing love for a lot of the songs. For the Love of Metal, the title track started as a joke in the studio. And it was like, hey, we should write a song called For Love of Metal. How many classic metal song titles can we put in the song?
Oh, okay.
So we were all sitting around and we're shouting them out. I once was under the blade. I was once the last in line. I was a victim of changes. You can't stop rock and roll. It is my life. This is my painkiller. My obsession runs deep. For the love of all things loud, united worldwide fills me with pride. All right. How many titles did I just say in that first verse? We do it for the love. Anyway, and it's what started as a kind of a goof all of a sudden turned into this incredible metal song. It's got this breakdown at the end, complete with the bell on the rise table, ding, and it went from being, like I said, just like how many song titles to like, whoa, this is heavy. So For the Love of Metal kind of is. We ran out of time. It's our last song. We had to cut it today.
Sometimes you talk on stage. I don't know if you realize.
Yes,
that.
Yes, I can get going.
It goes so well. What's your favorite Twisted Sister song that you wrote that wasn't a hit, like more of an album track? Is the one that you always stand up?
Yeah. It's a tough. The thing is, I wrote every single song,
right.
And I wouldn't give a song to the band that I didn't feel proud of. But there's songs that Burn in Hell. Okay, that song has become a hit. Especially in Europe, Dimmu Borgir covered it, and now I go out on stage there and go, "This is by Dimmu Borgir," and we'll go out to Burn in Hell because most of the young kids think it is. Yeah. They're like, "Oh, they're doing Dimmu," you know.
Yeah.
So
probably, Dimmu, D-E-E.
Yeah, exactly. Dimmu. So there's that one. I Am on Me, or If You Can't Stop Rock and Roll, which was a hit in England, was really my declaration of independence more than any other song. Where I just said, and of course it was my dad and my teachers and my bosses and my ex-girlfriends. And I just stood up and said, "Fuck you all. Fuck you all. You know, this is who I am and I'm not changing for anybody."
I always loved I Know What You Want. You Want What We Got.
You Want What We Got.
It's a great hook. It's a fun, memorable.
Well, thank you
hook,
for appreciating that.
Absolutely. Dee, great talking to you again. We'll get together in 2020 for your unannounced arena tour if you're still around.
Oh, we get together sooner than that because I was just approached to do a podcast.
Oh. You did one before.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. And I just sort of, I wasn't committed.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the, actually, it's the company that works Justice.
Yeah, yeah.
And they said, "We want to do," he says, "We want to call it I Want to Talk." And they said, "But we're not married to that." I said, "No, I kind of like
that's
that.
That's the one. Call me anytime. I owe you about 4 interviews now at this point."
Yeah, all right, brother.
Thanks,
you're
dude.
You're definitely going to be on.
Please. Thanks to Dee Snider for walking off stage literally at the Rock USA Festival in Wisconsin a few weeks ago and straight on to Talk Is Jericho. Always love talking to him. He's a great guest. Check out his new record, For the Love of Metal. It's out now. You can get it wherever you buy music, like FYE, Newbury Comics, iTunes, Amazon, or just go to dsnider.com. Listen, Dee's going to be signing copies of For the Love of Metal at Looney Tunes Great Record Store on Long Island Tuesday, August 28th from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. Go get the album and say hi to Dee in person. He is a great guy. Or go see him at the Dead Man's Curve Convention August 31st at the Sheraton Mahwah Hotel in Mahwah, New Jersey. And then he's going to be on the road with his new band. They're playing the Rose Music Center stage in Huber Heights, Ohio, August 25th. And more dates scheduled in September. So keep checking dsnider.com for ticket information and keep going to ChrisJerichoCruise.com for all the information on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. You need to be there. Book your cabin now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. We set sail October 27th. Make history with us, because remember, once you book your cabin, all the activities on the ship are free. Everything is included in the price of your cabin. All the live podcasts, concerts, comedy shows, meet and greets, autograph signings, and wrestling matches. Includes your food as well. Only things you pay for on board the ship are alcohol and gambling. And here's what we know for sure. Huge main event, the Alpha Club, the Bucks of Jericho, or is it Y2 Jackson versus Kenny Omega, Cody Rhodes, and Marty Scurll? It's the rematch people are waiting to see, Jericho Omega. It's a one time only on the cruise, Alpha Club versus Bullet Club. Also, very special, Impact versus Ring of Honor matches, Sammy Callahan versus Marty Scurll, LAX versus the Young Bucks, more matches to be announced. Live Talk Is Jericho with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Live Talk Is Jericho with Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. Live Talk Is Jericho with the entire
entire Bullet Club. Kenny, Cody, Young Bucks, Adam Page, Marty Scurll. Also, Live Talk is Jericho with Conan and Rey Mysterio talking about the life and times of Eddie Guerrero. Don't forget Mick Foley doing his 20 Years of Hell stand-up show. I'll be doing one of my own Words of Jericho live shows. We got Keeping It 100 versus Killing the Town live debate. And don't forget for the first round of the Ring of Honor, Sea of Honor tournament, which has been announced. Bracket A, Lethal versus Whitmer, Daniels versus Delirious, Skrull versus Titus, Young versus Flip Gordon. Bracket B, Mark Briscoe versus Ferrara, Paige versus Kazarian, Cheeseburger versus Beer City Bruiser, Jay Briscoe versus Kenny King. Beyond the Darkness will be there to scare the pants off you. Colt Cabana, Marty DeRosa doing their unprofessional wrestling show. Live comedy from Brad Williams, Ron Funches, Craig Gass, Impractical Jokers, and don't forget the music. Fozzy will be playing. Corey Taylor of Slipknot and Stone Sour. Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons. King, The Stir, The Dave Spivak Project. Shoot to Thrill, the world's best female AC/DC cover band. Blizzard of Ozzy will be there. The Cherry Bombs, the Darlings of Rock and Roll. Don't forget Mandy Leon, Kelly Klein will be there as well. Brandy Rhodes will be there. Cruise director SoCal Val. Special guest Noelle Foley helping out with hosting as well. So much going on. Come make history with us now. Still cabins available. We are selling more every day. This is going to sell out. And that's not some kind of a exaggeration. We are on the way to go. Book your cabin now. ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Come make history. Come join the fun. And coming on the Friday to talk about the cruise. In the first round of the tournament, he's facing Cheeseburger. It's the Beer City Bruiser is going to be here on Friday. So we will see you then. In the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yip! Yeah!